I will look back and forth and try to monitor if people drop in or drop out. But as Peter had mentioned before, it's very interactive. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to just jump in and ask as well. So don't be afraid to do that.
Yeah, so please do.
At this, I will turn it over to both Danielle and Peter.
Great, thanks. Thanks so much for having us with your group today. And this was actually a passion project of mine where I found for the first 4 weeks or so of COVID coming in, it really impacted my business. And I've enjoyed some recovery since then, but it certainly drove a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety about what was before us. I couldn't stop looking at the news. I had Worldometer in front of me all the time in terms of watching the numbers because I'm a numbers geek. And Danielle had provided me with a guide, which I'll share with you in a second. That was really the inspiration for this. So my role, I run Portage Sales, which is a consultancy all around helping companies, mids and small size tech companies, to tap into new growth. And my role was to make pretty slides for this, really, and set this up and organize this. Danielle, my wife, is the smart person who's actually a mental health professional who actually knows what she's talking about. So just so we have the real divide here, that's how we divide things out. The thing I'll set for context as well on this is that this is a timely conversation and continues to be a timely conversation. We, you know, the health officials are practically guaranteeing we'll have a second wave of COVID, unfortunately. This, we all know that until we have a vaccine, this will continue. I've had several conversations with colleagues, friends, family in the last week, and most of them, have expressed continued and even heightened anxiety in the face of all of this that's going on. And this set of tools has been fabulous from my perspective. I have gotten a ton of value and really centered me in terms of being able to step forward rather than be cycling on the present and the what ifs. So that's really where this whole deck comes from, just to share context. The second piece is this was part of me and my team at Portage Sales building out what we called our resilience series. It started with this piece, which was focused on you living with uncertainty. We built out a piece about leadership, resilient leadership, which is about you and your team in terms of leading your team. And then we launched as of Friday, the latest and the third piece in the puzzle for us, which is resilient revenue, which is all about planning for the recovery and starting to act towards the recovery. If anybody has any questions on how to work Zoom, this is the slide to answer all your questions. So I find this is a popular slide. There's a chat function down below, and I have my little chat window open beside my shared screen so I can watch the chat. And I encourage everybody to participate by putting in comments, questions, resources that you find really useful. Whatever comes up, throw it into the chat. It's great for everybody to have that. You'll see me throwing in a couple links as we go along as well in there. And of course, if you have any questions, just throw it into the chat. You can select to just send it to myself or to Kelly, and we'll be able to respond to that. And the other piece on this too is I'll just encourage you to unmute and start your video if at all possible. We will make this interactive, and I'm going to start asking questions in a couple of minutes to have everybody participate. So whether you like it or not, I can see your names in front of me, and so I'll if I hear crickets, then I will fill the space. The resource this was based in is a guide that was shared by Psychology Tools, and this is the thing that Danielle had brought home, called Living with Worry and Anxiety Amidst Global Uncertainty, and it has been terrific. I'll put that link into chat so everybody can click through, and it's a free guide. So it's just got a bunch of tools, and that's where, you know, literally I took the guide and turned that into some tools and have very clearly referenced that this is where this material has come from. Why don't I pause now to have you introduce yourself, Danielle?
Yeah, so I, my first wave of my career was in sales and marketing. I spent about 10 years packaged goods marketing and then sales to the packaged goods industry. And then I went back to school, got a master's of social work, and now I mainly work at Northrop General Hospital in the adult eating disorders program. And then I also have a private practice that serves clients with a broader variety of issues. So anxiety, depression, that kind of thing. So, and I guess it's, I can't believe the time's gone by, but it's been about 11 years now, 12 years now that I've been a social worker and a therapist. And you know, I wanna go back to, like, these ideas are not my ideas. They are common cognitive behavioral therapy principles. So I'm just adding a bit of context to them, but it's all in the Living with Uncertainty guide.
I'm still encouraging Danielle to write the book, but anyway. Next time.
Not we'll my ideas.
Okay, so to set context, and Danielle will provide so much interesting information, I think, for you today. I think you're going to find this a really rich session. But, you know, a survey just last month was that 74% of adults experienced worry in the last few days. The survey that I saw that came out on Friday is that 7 out of 10 surveyed working adults have found this to be the most stressful time in their career. So it is very normal right now to feel very stressed, a bit anxious at times, or very anxious at times. And the point of this is to provide you some practical tools to deal with that. So I do want to start off, now that you know what this is about, and hopefully you read the little blurb on it before you even came on, I want to have people at least come off of audio and ideally come onto video as well. And just share, if you can introduce yourself very briefly and give us one thing that you'd like to get out of today, that would be very helpful. And John, since you're my guy, can we kick off with you in terms of just one thing, introduce yourself and one thing that you'd like to get out of today?
Yeah, very good. First of all, thank you very, very much, both Peter and Danielle, for joining us today. Very much looking forward to the session. My name is John Cameron. I'm the executive director with TechConnect. I guess the thing I'm looking for most is understanding how to deal with anxiety. I mean, our organization right now is like most small businesses. We're dealing with the anxiety of trying to keep our heads above water. Trying to be responsive to our members with programs so they feel they're getting good value out of it, and just making sure that we can keep our heads afloat over the next little while, but at the same time make sure that we're able to offer some quality services and good value for our members. It's really just dealing with the anxiety and the stress, because it's there for all of us, and I understand that, but what are some of the coping mechanisms? That's what I'm interested in.
Great, thanks, John. Tiffany, do you mind going next? I see you there.
Hi, my name is Tiffany Cameron Lavoie. I work for a company, Leo Pharma. One of the many roles that I do there, I'm part of the Joint Health and Safety Committee, and we're currently working on a process on how are we working and returning to work, returning to the office? And I also support a team, a sales team. And for me, it's just looking for ways that making sure that everybody's supported through these times, where I can direct people, how I can help them while I'm still trying to navigate it through with my family and my kids and my role within the company.
Terrific. Thanks, Tiffany. Michelle, do you mind going next?
Hi, I'm Michelle Rands. I'm the senior HR specialist at Esri Canada. I'm actually filling in for Victoria, who was the one that registered for today, but she wasn't able to attend. But we're just basically trying to get some tools and resources to help us, navigate our employees. And, we check in with them regularly to see how everybody's doing. And, we're hoping to get some tools that can help us, support them the way that, to the best of our ability.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for joining us. And thanks for stepping in for your coworker.
No
and maybe we'll take one more. Jane, are you able to come on to audio and just share with us about what you wanted to get out of today?
Certainly. Yeah. Thank you, Peter. Jane Hutanen, Focal Point Coaching and Training. I help small business owners and organizations to build and grow and survive and thrive in times like this. So echoing, I think, what everyone else has said, I need some strategies to help myself and my family, but also I can pass on to my clients to help them get through this all.
Terrific. Good. I think you'll get a lot of that out of the today. So good. Okay. Thank you. And now I am going to, I know that I didn't get introductions from everybody, but I just wanted to get a sense and a little mini poll here of what you're interested in. I think we're going to be on track based on what you're sharing. So I'm going to pass it on to my much smarter partner here, who's going to take over.
Okay, so first and foremost, I just kind of want to talk a little bit about humans and emotions and the idea that humans think about the future a lot. And I want to look at anxiety in a greater context, the role and function of emotions in general for humans. So basically for us, our emotions are our signaling system to tell us what we need. So anger is telling us that we need to set boundaries, we need to fight for justice, we need to right a wrong. Sadness is telling us that, you know, we need to seek comfort or connection from trusted others. And fear is basically telling us that we need safety. And fundamentally, you know, we wouldn't even exist as a species if, you know, our ancestors hadn't had the fear to run away from the saber-toothed tiger, basically. But, you know, for those of us now that are privileged to live in a world where our lives are not under threat on a daily basis, our need for safety, so financial, social, emotional, becomes expressed more through anxiety than necessarily through straight up fear. And so, you know, a certain level of anxiety is actually quite functional, right? It's like anxiety gets us to do our taxes. It gets us to return our mother's phone calls, you know, if you know what's good for you. It gets us to do those things that you kind of should do in order to maintain safety within the context of our modern world. So in a COVID context, you know, where it does its job and it's quite helpful, is it actually gets us to take these safety precautions, right? Hand washing, don't touch your face, social distancing, that's helpful. However, you know, anxiety can catch on fire and it can lead to excessive worry. And excessive worry is when we dwell constantly on the worst case scenario. So my parents will die, I won't come out of this financially. And then we're moving from anxiety having more of a protective function to becoming paralyzing. And that's when we get into trouble and where we want to address it. So I want to give you a bit of an example of how anxious thoughts can kind of catch fire. So this is an example of a worry chain. So oftentimes it starts with something fairly benign, right? It might be a low-level physical symptom, it might be an emotion, it might be an interpersonal interaction, but usually it starts small. So in this example, it's like, I have a headache, you know, then it ladders up. What if it's coronavirus? I might have passed it on to someone, you know, who's going to die? And then imagining almost like an apocalypse where I've lost everyone. You know, in a business context, this might look more like, you know, whoa, you know, that client has still not called me back. That's my most important client. What if I lose this account? Oh my God, if I lose this account, that's half my revenue. Oh my God, half my revenue. What's going to happen for my business? Oh my God, my business is going to fail. So, and it can happen so quickly. And we're not always conscious of all the intermediary thoughts. Sometimes we experience more from headache to apocalypse, from client didn't call me back to, oh my God, the business is failing. One thing that's really important to note is that, you know, all emotions are physical and anxiety is particularly physical. And so, you know, you might start with a headache, but as you go along the worry chain, you know, people will feel other physical symptoms like nausea, pain in chest, pounding in your head, you know, and it can even lead to at the more extreme end, more of a panic attack. But, you know, the reason I bring up this physical aspect of anxiety is because for a lot of people, and maybe a lot of people here or people that you work with, might actually only be feeling the physical impact of anxiety, and they might not be able to link it to actual thoughts. So this happens a lot for people who might be chronic worriers, and they've spent a lot of time trying to set aside their worries and really trying to shut it down because it's been so disruptive. But, you know, the body evens the score. And what can happen is they might not necessarily have the conscious thoughts, but the physical symptoms are there and can be really distressing. So I bring that up because sometimes people experience these physical things without necessarily knowing exactly what the thoughts are. And, you know, it's, feelings are so physical. It's like to tell someone don't be anxious is almost like telling someone who's standing in the rain, don't feel wet. You know, like it's physical. It's a physical phenomenon. Okay. Okay, so COVID-19, actually, it's kind of, I don't know, it's almost like a mwahaha perfect storm for a lot of excessive worry. So first off, it's ambiguous, right? The situation's ambiguous and it's open to interpretation. And if you're experiencing a high baseline level of anxiety, it's likely going to be a catastrophic interpretation. It's novel and new. We don't have a lot of experience with this. And experience, whether it was a good experience or a bad experience, still provides us as humans with a little bit of comfort because it's a little bit of something known. And when something's completely new, it leaves us feeling a little destabilized because we don't have experience with it. And lastly, it's unpredictable. I mean, the last pandemic we had was in 1918 and the world was a lot different then. So we don't really have a roadmap for how this is going to turn out. And therefore, we don't really know the implications for society, our businesses, for us personally. So I put this up there to say that, you know, if you're worried or your employees are worried or your coworkers are worried, like they have very good reason to be worried. So I want to encourage, like, when people are having those worries, it's not about judging yourself for those worries or telling yourself that you shouldn't worry. This is actually a very natural human protective process. So it's more important to support yourself through coping with worry versus trying to tell yourself, oh God, stop worrying, don't worry. You know, you're focusing too much on the wrong thing, right? This is normal. We are humans in the face of a pandemic. So it is natural and protective for us to worry. But that being said, when we go from low-level functional worry to paralyzing worry, where it's spiraling out of control, that's when it becomes a problem, and that's when we want a lot more targeted tools to try and address it.
To put this in context, Kelly, do you want to launch the poll, or do you want me to launch the poll?
Let me give it a try. So.
Awesome. Go.
There.
We have a poll question.
This is the first time. Okay. Perfect.
Okay, so really for everybody, it's multiple choice, so click as many as that apply for you. And the question is, what has worked so far for you to manage your excess worry and anxiety?
Gratitude, thankful for what you have.
That's great. So we've got a little over half coming up to, yeah, I think we're, there we go.
Way to be interactive. You don't have to speak. My glasses.
Okay. I think we've got them all, Kelly.
Okay.
You can publish so then you just click the publish results. There you go. Okay, so just to debrief that, so we've got most people are saying self-care. Can really relate to that. I tried Orange Theory online, gave up on that, and ended up doing hikes with weighted vests most mornings with the dog and with Danielle to keep my physical activity going. Building new structures into my day, absolutely understand that one too, given working from home. And we'll talk about that in terms of setting up some boundaries around work as well. And then we've got meditation and mindfulness, practicing gratitude, giving back to my community. And of course, there's other strategies for people too. So that's great. So I think you can hit end sharing there, Kelly.
There we go.
Perfect, thank you. So that gives us a good sense for what everybody's up to. And we're gonna jump into now what we deemed our four steps from worry to well-being.
Oh, that's a good picture.
Mm-hmm. So, and again, like, I just want to say, these are just basically cognitive behavioral strategies for worry management. It's called worry management. Oftentimes it's used to treat generalized anxiety disorder, these types of strategies. But, you know, like, really, these strategies are helpful for anyone that has any kind of worry. You know, all of us can benefit from them. One thing, though, the way we always treat these types of skills is, like, some skills are really suited to some people and not to others. I always use the example of mindfulness. Like, some people love mindfulness and it works wonders for them, and other people hate it. So, you know, it's really, this isn't so much a prescription as it is a menu for you to kind of take what will be helpful. Yeah, so my cheesy joke is the appetizer on the menu, is to find balance in terms of how you spend your spare time and where you invest your energy. So it was really actually interesting that people noted, I think it was like 79% of you said that you invested more in self-care, which is excellent. And the thing here that we want to highlight is that in your investment in self-care, it's really important to balance three things. So we want a balanced pleasure, achievement, and closeness and connection. And you can think of it like a three-legged stool. You need to have all three in equal quantity in order to feel grounded and balanced. So, you know, for example, I actually think it's great that, you know, in popular media and culture, we see a lot of focus on self-care and, you know, gratitude and that kind of thing. A lot of self-care that's talked about in general media is more around pleasure, you know? So, you know, it's important to get a bubble bath and do a manicure and that kind of more pleasure-oriented stuff. But we find when people invest so much of their spare time only in pleasure, it can start to feel a little bit meaningless and a little bit lonely if it's exclusively. How many people, like me, I'm a real tasky person. So when quarantine happened, I had this fantasy of cleaning out every closet in our home. So I'm clearly an achievement-oriented person. But the problem, and I speak from humbled experience with that, is that if you treat all of your spare time energy being focused on achievement, you're fundamentally going to often be left feeling dissatisfied because you never get to all the closets. You never get to everything you want to do. Sometimes that can lead almost to a sense of failure. You can kind of feel a little bit like you're on a treadmill in your personal life, and you can feel exhausted, drained, and again, kind of lonely. And then the last piece is closeness and connection. And again, if you focus too much on this, if this is the only thing, I mean, I have to say through the pandemic, the one kind of nice benefit has been that, you know, I've talked to a lot of people that I didn't really used to talk to. It seems like everybody wants to reach out, which is wonderful. But if you spend all day on Zoom and then you spend all night on Zoom cocktails, you get drained in a very different way. That is equally draining, sometimes more draining. So it's important, and you might feel the urge to go clean a closet, you know, because you feel out of balance. So what you want to do is just make sure, it doesn't have to be balanced every day, but you want to make sure that over the course of the week, over the course of a weekend, that you're getting a decent balance of all three of these things. So it's like self-care is excellent, but, you know, you want to make sure it's balanced and thoughtful.
Okay. Sorry, I was going to jump in there because I did see Jack's, what he sent to everybody here regarding finding that balance, because it is, and we talked about it at the very beginning, Danielle, is sometimes it's overwhelming and it is tiring going through all of this. And we had kind of even talked about, I know we do Zoom calls like with family and stuff, just so we can see everybody, but it was that finding the right time of day too, because sometimes you've been online, you've been sitting at your desk, you've been doing stuff all day. So it's trying to find that balance. So having said that, how do you find that balance for your employees at work? Because this is maybe yourself, because I know, I think Michelle had mentioned they're trying to find that for the people that they work with. How do you find that for your employees as well and set those boundaries?
Like in a work context, in terms of too much Zoom and too much, I mean, I'm finding more and more, I think it's important to almost kind of combine some of these things. Like, so to the best of people's ability, take it off Zoom because it is so draining. And ironically, we're doing a Zoom call, but I'm very aware of the meta thing that's happening right now. But possibly, you know, doing a phone call while walking, you know, just doing sound only. You know, you've done a lot of this with your team.
Some of the things. So our other unit that I mentioned, the workshop that I mentioned, is all around resilient leadership. And we've actually taken this kind of three-legged stool and adapted it as a leader. And some of the tips that we throw out for leaders of organizations right now is, you know, create some shared opportunity for achievement. So reset your North Star goal for the year. So everybody's kind of pulling in the same direction to start to create some of that balance. Do informal, like I now with one of my, the folks that I work with, I do a walk the dog together. So, you know, I'm on the phone, she's on the phone, on headsets, and we're walking the dog at the same time. So it starts to avoid some of that fatigue and then switching it up, but absolutely feel the same way, Kelly, that, you know, we pulled right back from the social Zooms in the evening as well. Like it's just tough to hit that balance right now.
Right. I wonder if anyone else has managed to find ways to curtail the over Zooming. I don't know if that's a chattable thing.
Lynn, maybe.
Actually, what we found out in our family, myself, my husband, and our daughter, we're doing a lot of Zoom, and we get into conflict of Zoom, using Zoom. So we agree that we are actually going to set a schedule, right? Definitely also set up a schedule for family.
Sorry, there's a package at the post office for me yesterday. Oh,
oops.
Morning.
People on Zoom with unmuted. Sorry, people.
No worries. That's okay, Marie.
Yeah. Because we also have our father in law, 99 years old, coming and stay with us during the pandemic. So we thought that would be important for us to spend time to talk using his, he missed his 99 year birthday party. So we talk about maybe we should organize sometime next year and trying to do such a way that it would help us to stick to the Zoom schedule, because we found out that not only we have Zoom call that we have to attend, we also have lots of webinar. Every day I'm receiving so many offer of webinar from different network and from friends and calls. So it's getting, I call it Zoom fatigue.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear it over and over again. Can I pick on you, Jane? Like, sorry, you're just taking a sip. Yeah. It was perfect timing. I just had that nail.
Choke on it. It's okay.
Yeah. What are you hearing from your clients in terms of how they're striking balance in the workplace?
So it is similar things. The extroverts are going crazy because they can't get enough.
Yeah.
So they are happy to be on Zoom all day. I actually have a friend who will be on two Zoom calls at the same time, and she will go back and forth at that, and it somehow works for her. And I said, well, I would mix up my conversations, but anyway. So, you know, the extroverts are craving it, and the introverts are like, I'm an introvert, and I have days where it's like, I cannot take another moment on Zoom. I need to go lock myself in the bedroom and close the door.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, and so I have been evaluating all the networking groups that I'm doing Zoom, because they're doing them more often because it's easier with Zoom. I was feeling I needed to go to all of them. And my clients are saying the same. Well, I need to do this because I'm a member. And it's like, well, no, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You can pull back. And so some of them are, you know, managing to keep their businesses going just fine. And some of them are struggling, of course, and trying to figure out how to do the networking. The really cool thing is that I've heard this from a number of people. When normally, if you would go for coffee dates to network with people, you could do maybe one a day. So you might get, you know, two or three done in the week because you've got to travel there, travel back. Now, depending on how busy you are, you can do three or four a day.
Hmm.
So if you're comfortable with that, I know a lot of people who are laying all of the groundwork and planting a lot of seeds and building relationships, which when things open up again, hopefully will turn into business for them.
Yeah.
So some are loving it, some are hating it.
Yeah. No, I can attest to that as well, Jane, that I've been pushing right now in terms of building my network in California because it's tech companies there.
Cool.
And finding I'm now writing two proposals, but really the point was I could easily network. I could fit a few in each day, and it's been an excellent avenue that I don't think I would have enjoyed because the phone call is not the same.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
People have figured out that it can work well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just one personal tip is exercising your eyes. Because I found out that, you know, the zooming and the focus on the laptop or in the smartphone does create some impact to your eye. So I've been talking to my eye doctor, and she advised me, try to, you know, roll your eyes and exercise, do a lot of eyes exercising.
eye rolling, but for a good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if we roll our eyes on this call, it's the exercise. It's
not the exercise. Yeah. It's not what's being.
I'm gonna say that from now on.
All right, let's keep moving.
Okay. Sorry. Documenting worries. So these next two strategies are. I just want to kind of distinguish. These next two strategies are more related to the types of worries where people are spiraling, right? So this is where it's like the types of worries where you're up at 3 a.m., you can't stop worrying, it's really interfering with your life. So that's what these next two strategies are for. I do want to kind of set distinguish that from, you know, really typical anxious thoughts or anxious feelings that are totally normal, that you don't necessarily need to have strategies for, but instead really just needing to accept the feeling, kind of allow yourself to have the feeling without judging it, and then possibly sharing it with someone else. So the example I always use is, you know, at the very beginning of this whole COVID thing, I would often have this sort of sense of like doom kind of in my chest, like dawn of the apocalypse, end of days kind of doom, which is obviously very uncomfortable. But, you know, we live in a really small village and I walk my dog, and I shared it with my neighbors, and asking my neighbors, like, do you have that thing? And it's kind of funny. It's a comment on how, you know, as humans, we're more the same than we are different, because most of my neighbors could totally relate to the impending doom. And so the more that, you know, for more typical anxious thoughts, the more that you can accept them, not judge them, acknowledge them, and maybe share them with people you feel comfortable with, fundamentally, we're able to cope with them a lot better if we're not as alone with them. And so it doesn't mean that the doom isn't visiting on me every once in a while. It's just that my relationship with it is different, because instead of it being something that happens to me, it's more something that, you know, I'm very aware that, like, oh, there's the doom, there's the end of days. And oh, I know that both Betty and Sharon feel the same thing, you know? And so your ability to kind of put it in its place, allow it and cope with it, changes if you accept it and share it. That's a whole other thing, but I just wanted to distinguish between those two different things. So the next two strategies are more for the spiraling type. So the first is documentation and managing worry. So for people, particularly people who might feel only the physical symptoms of anxiety, that's even more important to start writing down your thoughts. We call it thought catching, so that, you know, it comes into your conscious, and then you're better able to deal with it. So first off, you're documenting your thoughts, and then you're asking yourself, is this a worry that I can do something about right now, right? If it falls under yes, it's considered a practical worry. And we make an action plan to solve the worry. And I think everybody on this call is very capable and good at problem solving and action plans. So the example being, what if I don't have enough cash to cover payroll? My action plan is to apply for the government loan. The other side of it is more the hypothetical worry. So by hypothetical, it really means, you know, these are the what ifs. So I can't do anything about whether or not my parents might get infected with COVID-19. One thing I want to say about hypothetical worries that's really important is that you don't want to discount those. Just because they're hypothetical doesn't mean that they're not valid. They're very valid. And it doesn't mean that they're not possible. Of course they're possible. That's why we worry about them. You know, there's a really good reason why we have that grain of thought in our brain, right? But the problem with hypothetical worries is fundamentally we can't do much about them. So the strategy for dealing with hypothetical worries is to use worry time to help let them go. So what that is basically scheduling a worry appointment through the day. So I always have a moment with my clients when we're talking about this and I say, okay, so you're going to schedule a time to worry. And they give me this look of like, right, so to help with my worry, I'm going to dedicate time to worrying. And it's very much a, yeah, I'm going to call the other therapists that were on my referral list. Maybe the one with crystals has something, you know, better to offer. But there's a really good logic and rationale for why this is effective. And the reason it is because worries can be very intrusive. It can feel a little bit like a sniper following you. You can kind of be almost like a worry can lodge itself randomly at any time. And that in and of itself is very distressing and anxiety provoking. So the idea about creating a worry appointment and corralling those worries into one dedicated time in the day is that you at least have some control in terms of how you're managing that worry. So I'm just going to go through a little bit about how it works. So first off, you're planning for your worry time. So the example I always use is, and I'll get into some details about what to think about when planning a worry time. So you'll, let's say, plan for 6 o'clock each day. I'm going to set aside 30 minutes for worry time. Then throughout the day, as you're documenting your worry, what you want to do is, again, go between what's practical and what's more hypothetical. And then you're going to note all of the hypothetical worries, put a star next to them. And whenever you have a hypothetical worry, you want to kind of redirect yourself to say, okay, you know what? I got that worry. That's great. I know that that's there, but you know what? That's for my 6 o'clock appointment. So I'm going to hold on to that and I'm going to redirect and go back to my spreadsheet, or I'm going to go back to whatever it is I'm working on. And I'm going to come back to that worry at 6 o'clock. And then lastly is using your worry time. It's really important to focus your worry time only on your worries. This is one of the things, the mistakes that people can make is they don't necessarily only focus on their worries during the worry time.
So this is something I can attest to as well, is that it's a practice I put in place for 6 to 6:30 every night. And I actually would avoid the news until I had that worry time. I would just immerse myself into the worry time from 6 to 6:30. And it really made a big difference in making the rest of my day not only focused, but a lot happier, a lot more peaceful.
Yeah. One thing I want to say with choosing your worry time, try not to make it too close to bed. So like within a few, 2 hours, I would say, before your bedtime. So make sure you've got a buffer there. So your worry appointment is an appointment with yourself. It's a meeting. And so just like any meeting, you've got to plan for it in order for it to be effective. So number one, you're choosing the right time when you're in a better frame of mind to handle the worries. I cannot emphasize this enough, no distractions. So the phone has to go somewhere else. You must not be in front of your computer. You must banish your children, maybe pets. And this is really important because the idea of focusing on the worries is so that you can actually address them and deal with them. And if you don't and you're constantly distracted, then they're just going to come back. So what you want to do is spend time with each worry and ask yourself these questions. How did you feel when you wrote it down versus now? And has it changed? Did the thing you were worried about happen? And if so, how did you cope? Would continuing to worry about it during the day have made any kind of difference? And what could you be doing instead of worrying? Now, one thing with this that's important is, one thing that can happen with hypothetical worries is you might find a grain of something problem solvable within that hypothetical worry. So an example would be, oh, I'm afraid my parents are going to get COVID, right? And it's like, yeah, that's a hypothetical worry. You don't really have control over that. But one thing you could do is, drop off their groceries for them or remind them to wash their hands. Now, I say this with a grain of salt. You have to be really careful because you don't want to over problem solve for something that's hypothetical, because that can start to feel like a wild goose chase because you can't fundamentally totally control it, right? But you might find a few things that you could do that can give you some relief. My experience with clients on this is that, I tell them to schedule 30 minutes. Usually they're done by about 15 minutes. And it has this really interesting effect, which is that they're really sick of their worries. They don't feel quite as powerful anymore. I don't know if anyone's had that that thing where you wake up at 3 a.m. and you really worry hard about something, but then in the light of day, it just doesn't seem as worrisome. And the same thing happens with worry appointments. It's almost like, it's like a form of exposure where you start to get a bit bored. People come back and they're like, you know, I was done after 15 minutes, and I'm like, go the 30, keep doing it. And the impact of this, what happens over time, is that people start to see those intrusive worries that are more hypothetical, they tend to go down through the day. But I still encourage people to book a worry time and always have a worry time in their calendar. You know, if it reaches a point where you're no longer worrying, then there's no need for it. But it can be a really effective way of managing sort of what's coming into your brain. There's kind of this meta benefit about all of this too, which is that we don't really have any control over the situation, really, fundamentally, but how you choose to kind of manage your worry about it can help you feel like you have a sense of control. Like, I can't really control COVID, but I can control how I'm managing my worry. And that in and of itself can actually be pretty calming. Any questions about, I know that this concept is a bit odd for a lot of people. They find it, they have a bit of trouble with it, but does anyone have questions about it?
So just raise your hand, or you can put it into the chat too, and I'll keep the chat rolling if somebody comes up with a question. And we're going to leave a couple minutes at the end here just to answer any other questions on it.
I was going to say, I've heard something very similar. It's kind of that worry time, but it is, you think of what is the worst case scenario that could happen in that situation, especially the ones that you're like, you maybe can't control. And then, okay, if that worst case happens, what can you do about it? So those are some of the things that I've kind of, it's very similar to that.
Yeah. And that's a really good one, because that's sort of like, oftentimes anxiety can come from the thing it's happening, but oftentimes like, what is the, how will I cope with that thing? And once we have a plan for how we can cope with that thing, oftentimes we're able to deal with the anxiety a little bit better. The one thing about COVID that's kind of interesting, like so some other types of anxiety, like PTSD, where, you know, we really engage with the actual worry. So if someone's really worried about people breaking into their house, then we'll go and we'll say, okay, like, let's look at the crime statistics in your neighborhood. Let's look at, you know, let's literally calculate the probability of that happening, right? To put that worry in its context, you know, I'm spending 90% of my day worrying about something that has a 5% chance. However, we try and stay away with that with COVID, because it's, you know, the statistics that's changing every day, and it can actually lead to more anxiety, like specifically around COVID, not necessarily, you know, maybe there's business worries, you know, around renewal rates and stuff like that, that you actually could go through the exercise and calculate what's the probability that, you know, that these people aren't going to renew or whatever the case may be.
Any other questions before we push forward or comment?
Well, it's John. I'll make a couple of comments. And I think because I've gone through a significant amount of experience over the years with various companies, from running them into, you know, being acquired by another company, being spun off by a company, selling a company. And we had a chance to get a lot of feedback from people. But I think, you know, first and foremost is always to recognize that you cannot control everything. And that sounds easy, but that's the reality. And it's putting into perspective, there are things that you can control, as you've said so very well, and things you can't. But first step is recognizing it. And then the things that you have some control over is doing everything within your power to put programs in place, be creative, learn that some of them will work, some of them won't work. But, you know, you keep trying things, and that's part of the excitement, and that's part of what keeps you very busy, and more often than not will move you away from the things you can't control. But you got to recognize that there are things you can't. Yeah, and that's number one. But, you know, do what you can to kind of mitigate those things, because even though you can't control them, there are things that you can do to put them in perspective. So I would just emphasize recognizing, as you stated so very well, and accepting the fact that there will be things you just can't control, and the challenge is to try to put them aside, or at least
put some particular actions in place to mitigate those things.
We had a question from Sam saying, in balancing everything that you would like to adopt as a habit, like relaxation, exercise, how would you suggest that you fit this worry time in?
Like in terms of...
I think it's more the balance given all the demands on our time.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do?
Yeah. Sorry, jump in. So that thought is that, is this something you, you know, you put as your ongoing daily habit, or is it something you would use as a practice when you feel that higher pressure situations and anxiety and things like that?
Usually we suggest build this in as an appointment on a daily basis while you're going through a heavy period of worry. And like, particularly if you're finding yourself waking up in the middle of the night, or if you're finding yourself not able to concentrate on other things, it's kind of more, you use it as an as needed basis, but that period of need might be a week, it might be 2 weeks. So as long as you're sort of plagued by that excessive worry, I highly recommend including the worry period every day. Now, once that time passes, then, you know, I would say use it as needed basis. But like if you are in a really difficult time, I would suggest use it until the worries are no longer interfering with your day and your sleep.
We've got about 5 minutes left. I want to be conscious. We started a couple minutes late, but I want to be conscious of everybody's time. So we're going to just zip through the next piece. I want to make sure we get to that, how to help others, to make sure we don't drop that one. But
so the last piece are ways to come back and be in the now. First is practice mindfulness. I'm not even really going to talk about mindfulness because it's so well covered in other places. There's tons of apps. Insight Timer is an excellent app. It's free. There's a few others. The Mindfulness app is also very good. And mindfulness is really just a way to help you not lose the moment and actually be in the moment. Also, routines built and followed every day. So I think some people actually put routines on the poll. This is so important, particularly around working from home. And in a work context, it's really important to try and set some work-home boundaries. Because if you're starting to feel like every day is Groundhog Day, it's probably because work and home is all mixed in all the time. So you need to kind of create some periods where there's no work happening, you know, like have an evening the way you used to have an evening. And that's really important to also fit in some of that other time for investing your energy in achievement and connection and pleasure. They're being active, obviously, with exercise. One thing about exercise that I love, I have to say, is that it kind of can hit all three aspects of achievement, pleasure, and connection, especially if you're, you know, going for a walk with a friend. So it's a lot of bang for your buck. But there's the handout that Peter has linked on the slide has an excellent list of activities under each different category.
And again, I'll send out the PDF of this deck through you, Kelly, so you can send it to the attendees afterwards, and you'll have the link right on the, I think it's slide 4 of that.
Practicing gratitude. I think probably a lot of people have heard of gratitude journals. That can be really helpful. But the one thing about it that's important is trying to be as specific as possible. So you want to say like, you know, I'm grateful for the fact that at 1 o'clock today, I was able to sit in the sun with my daughter and share a popsicle, you know, because that sort of really brings it into your brain at the forefront and allows your brain to kind of capture that as a positive moment. Try to stay away from more generalities, like I'm grateful for, you know, the sky, you know, really make it more personal to your own experience. Example. Limit triggers for social media and stay away from bad sources of news. Okay, how to help others. Honestly, there could be like a whole other webinar on that, but you know, the quickest way to an eye roll from your spouse, your teenager, your employee is to say, number one, don't worry. Never say don't worry to someone. And secondly, the other quick way is to say, you know, that's a great tool. You need to separate your hypothetical versus practical worries. In that moment, when someone is expressing worry,
really what they need is somebody to just be on their team. And by validating and expressing empathy. So putting yourself in that person's shoes. So if you have an employee whose client is not calling them back and they're freaking out and they're saying, oh my God, I'm afraid I've lost this account. I'm really terrified. It's more about, yeah, I mean, that could be really scary. I totally get how you're really freaking out right now. They haven't called you back in 3 days and I'm sure your brain is going in many different directions. That's really a great way to help people in the moment. What we know is that when people's feelings are validated, literally, because we know this now with brain scanning, the amygdala, the activity in the amygdala calms down. So it's like people are able to just, through that sense of someone understanding how they're feeling, that in and of itself is actually quite helpful. So, you know, with family-based therapy, with a whole bunch of other tools in mental health, we always, always, always say, validate first, express empathy first. If you need to provide tools or help them get in the driver's seat, do that if it's asked for, but don't offer that if it's not asked for. First and foremost, always start with validation and empathy. And, you know, oftentimes people worry that, oh my gosh, if I validate their worries, does that make them think that they're true? Well, people are already worried that they're true, right? So you're not going to make it worse. You're just going to express to them that you fundamentally understand, that you get that, you know, of course you feel worried. You're not crazy for thinking that, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean that you agree with the outcome. You're not necessarily agreeing that, oh yeah, you're going to lose that client, but you are kind of expressing, yeah, I could see how you'd be terrified when they haven't called you back for 3 days that you might be in jeopardy, you know? Is that making sense? People, anyway, I don't even know if people have a lot of issues with that one sometimes, but.
Good. I think we're at time right now. I hope everybody's found this valuable. We're happy to sit on here and answer questions. Sorry, we ran out of time. We had planned or hoped for about 5 minutes, but because we started a little bit later, I think, and we had some good interaction going through this, so that was terrific. That's really the main goal of this, is to allow everybody to get your hands dirty on this. So we'll pause here. This is our last slide, we promise, which is just really the goal of this is to have you pick something that fits best for you, and you can put that into the chat to communicate that to your community here, and then try that out for this week. Just see how it goes. And through Kelly as well, I think we'll have our contact information on the deck that we're going to share. So if anybody has any follow-up questions, just feel free to email, text, whatever, and happy to help out in that way as well.
I'd like to take the time just to say thank you to both Danielle and Peter for going through this with everybody. And yeah, we did start a little bit late. If anybody has to jump off, feel free to jump off, but at this point, if you do have any questions, don't hesitate to ask right now.
Great. And we have from Lan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's a great session.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Some good coping strategies. Yeah. Thank you.
I
did want to just mention as well, sorry, before that I know we were kind of talking about the beginning of workplace and people are worried about actually having to return to a physical workplace and what will that look like. We're running a session tomorrow with Dan Condon. He's an employment and labor lawyer at Wilson Bukalik, and he's going to actually talk about what employers need, the key matters that employees need to consider when they're going to return back to workplace, kind of what you have to be aware of, the new policies that have to be in place. So if that's something that you're worried about, it's a valid point. So Dan Condon's going to be running that session because he says, you know, there's a lot of changes that are going on, a lot of things that people within their businesses have to do as well.
Oh, and thank goodness you guys are around, Kelly and Ryan Turns are running this, because it's just so valuable. I think everybody needs those resources right now, and there's so much changing all at once. So to be able to have these kinds of sessions that are highly relevant stacked up, it's awesome. Really hats off. Sorry.
Guys, I was going to ask a question. I know Peter, you and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Is anxiety actually about around children? And what kind of stuff have you guys come across? Because I know... like I have three kids doing homeschool right now, and it's the fear of the unknown, trying to get work done, and not seeing friends for what's this, like week 11 or 12. I think March 15th was the last time I saw somebody besides me. So have you guys come across any tools or tips? I know we had to buy a mindfulness book for my son, just because he's taken this the hardest. You know, has other people been mentioning my children? Because that's some of my anxiety of the day is my kids' anxiety of trying to get their work done as well.
Yeah. And are they struggling to get the work done? Like, are they?
Every day's, Monday's the worst day, because that's the overload, because their teachers do the one drop dump. Everything gets dropped at once.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, hand everything in by Friday. Okay. So it's kind of all over the place. It's like good days, bad days. It all depends on what the work is in itself. But the subject matters, it's the same stuff. It's a lot of language and math. And it's getting very repetitive. And so obviously physical activity is the other thing. And like for us, we bike a lot. And so that's our recess. But it's been kind of all over the place. So I just want to know if there's anything you guys have come across more directed towards children.
The main stuff I've come across has been more about first of all, not necessarily having the same expectations from in school that you would at home. And knowing for yourself as a parent and with your kids that there's no right way to do a global pandemic, you know, like we've never, you know, done this before. But taking that chunk, for example, on Monday and parsing it out through the week and like working with your kid to decide, okay, we're going to do this on this day. We're going to do this on this day. You've probably done that.
Yeah, we have. It's just because of work is all over, and we're also doing dual language in our house, so it's both the French and the English. There's points where, like, I used to be fluent. I can't do it anymore. It's words I've never seen before, you know. And so it's just a lot of that stuff. So it's even I get frustrated. My wife gets frustrated. She's a teacher doing a 4-5 split.
Oh my god.
A lot of school going on at our house. But if there's any additional resources, and like, I guess this is a different conversation now since we're kind of into it. We're 11, 12 weeks into this. So we have gotten a schedule, but who knows what's going to happen next year. If it's going to be a hybrid, I'm not sure. But I just want to know what you guys were thinking about that, or if you guys have come across it.
Sorry, I'm jumping in here because I see Michelle even said the same thing, is that, you know, it's finding that balance between being a good parent, being a good everything. My neighbor across the street has two little ones and actually just said to me, we just totally stopped school because it's not working. He goes, we're both trying to work full time with our jobs. It's not their job to have to teach, and the teacher do the exact same thing. It's just that dump, and it was the fight. But I did speak with somebody yesterday who said the first thing they do is they get up and dedicate kind of an hour in the morning. The kids are fresh. They just do the homework and then kind of move on, and that's it for the kids. Then they can get to their job. So it is finding that balance between everything.
It's, I guess also, like, the kids aren't going to fail. And I think one thing, but I don't want to set a precedence where you're passing, don't worry about the work, because that just sets a really bad mindset that, you know, you got to continue doing the work even though you're still going to pass. Like, that's a given for this year. But it's just, you know, getting that stuff done is can be a little hectic. So,
you know, with some of my clients, actually, we've kind of talked about not getting all of it done. Like, we've talked about kind of like choosing you and your kid, deciding what are the most important pieces and only doing those two things. It wouldn't work for everybody, but just to take some of the pressure off, because it's like kind of finding, I understand what you're saying, it's finding that balance. Like, you don't want to kind of send the message to the kid that, like, oh, it's fine, you're going to pass, we're not going to do anything. But at the same time, acknowledging that there's so many pressures, both for you and your wife and the kids, of picking and choosing which parts might be the most important to get done, but not necessarily doing all of it.
Yeah,
that's
true. Yeah. Cool, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for weighing in, Ryan. Really appreciate it.
Anyone else?
Yep. Yeah. Sorry, Ryan, I cut you off there.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, biking, I was going to mention the worrying thing. I've I think I'm a 2 to 3 a.m.er worry because I got so much going on during the day, but like I'm close to 1,000 kilometers of riding in the last, 11 weeks. I'll break 1,000 kilometers this week. So 6 o'clock rides. That's my kind of my mindfulness, but yeah, unfortunately I don't have time to worry. It's when I'm and it's like we're up. So the first 4 to 5 weeks were bad. It's a lot better now, but
yeah, I have exactly the same experience too. Yeah, it has been better. It still goes up and down a little bit, but much better. And I just so many new routines to put in place. It was a total renovation of my kind of work day and evening and morning and all the rest of it.
Yeah. I think that's a valid point because it's once you can rework your schedule for everything and how it's going to adapt for you and just maybe taking that balance. You know, sometimes it's not going to work to start at the exact same time, but maybe you need to work a little bit later or maybe you need to take a few more breaks. And I think that's the other thing is we're all forgetting to take breaks during the day too, as you get here focused. And as Lan had mentioned, you know, you need to exercise your eyes on something else. And more and more of us are sitting in an uncomfortable chair. You're sitting at the kitchen table on a different chair. And Maureen, who just jumped off, she was saying that they're trying to do some sessions with their clients on actually what you should be doing while you're sitting at your desk, some exercises. And it's because more and more people now are having issues and they can't get to the chiropractor, the massage, et cetera, and so forth. So ergonomically, what are some of the things you should be doing? So we're actually looking at maybe running a session on that.
One thing I keep reminding my clients of is that self-care is a business building activity. Because unless they take care of themselves, they cannot take care of their business or their family, right? Yeah. And so it's the put yourself first so that you are whole and then you can family, friends, business, employer, work, you know. But it's, you know, you've got to put yourself first.
Yeah. One of the concepts I've been leveraging a lot, Jane, is I do a program called Strategic Coach and they have this concept called free days. Which is basically you've got focus, buffer, and free days, and I'm trying to do that more. It's been harder, honestly, to put it in place, but to actually take a 24-hour period from midnight to midnight of no work, no email, no Slack, no text related to work, no business reading, like really just step away. And I do find I come back refreshed, more creative, coming back with better perspective and more energy as well for it. And I was practicing that since last November, and these last 2 months have been the toughest months to implement it. It's been so hard because my office is right there. Everything is right here.
There are no boundaries. There are no visual, physical boundaries in the same way. You don't have, you know, a commute. You don't have a door you can close necessarily. Yeah. It's not in a different building. Your computer's always there. The piles of paper on your desk are always there, calling you, Peter, come.
Of course, yeah.
And also the commute time, I think for a lot of people, as awful as commuting is, it is a transition moment, you know, from work to home. And without that transition moment, I mean, we've tried to create transition moments. So like once we're done working, going out for a walk or going for a hike or something like that, just to kind of recreate that. But
I think the other
Try not to make the transition moment a glass of wine every time.
Oh my God.
Not every night, yes. When you're working, you know, wearing work clothes and then changing into casual clothes when you're done work, you know, to put on the shorts and the t-shirt instead of the nice top or, you know, whatever. So some of those physical habits, drilling things in and having a place where this is where I work and this is the only place I work. Mm-hmm. So if you're kind of hopping and changing desks and sometimes on the couch or the kitchen table or the bedroom, then every place is a workspace.
Mm. Yeah.
But this is my corner. Mm-hmm. And when I'm there, I'm working. And when I'm not there, I'm not working.
Yeah.
Can also help.
I like that boundary and the change of clothes too. I think I do that unconsciously sometimes, and I, I think based on that comment, I'll do it a little more consciously. Oh, Ryan, I wanted to pop in to say that you had had me for the early April session. That was the roundtable-y thing. It was my first exposure to you guys.